Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey everybody, welcome to Eating Disorder. My name is Paul Gerard, and we're happy to be back. It's the first time we've all been back in a while. Adam is, he's on summer vacation, I guess. Yeah. You know, like the extended summer vacation, what some of us refer to as our 20s. And luckily we're joined by Mr. Competitive Eater, Crazy Legs Conti.
Great to be here.
Very nice. The Reverend Spiro is with us.
Tut-tut, howdy-ho.
Oh, very nice. For our etiquette show. Is that what you're laying that on us? Very nice. Today we'll be discussing etiquette, the customary code of polite behavior in society.
And I'm going to try really, really hard not to curse.
Please do, Spiro. Refrain from unsavory speech.
Do you have some alternate words picked out that are non-curses?
Fudge. What a friend once told me is that, you know, no one's ever been offended by the lack of obscenity. And I said, fuck.
All right, well, today we're going to have to hold back on it because we don't want to offend our guests. But I did want to just talk briefly about the hot dog eating competition, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition.
Which we attended last week.
Yes, we gathered at Ruby's after the contest. It was a rainy day, causing the hot dogs to get a little tighter, a little more, heading towards beef jerky or a hard salami.
Is that really an issue?
Yeah, weather can factor in. Certainly, really? A lot
it's
of the
like
guys were about 10 dogs off their pace, but Joey Chestnut really pulled it out, and in part because he proposed to his girlfriend moments before the 10-minute all-you-can-eat hot dog eating contest. Wow. So I wonder about the etiquette of that. I spoke to the league afterwards, and both they and ESPN repeatedly tried to get Joey to propose afterwards, so this would be a nice culmination of the contest and the broadcast.
They could get it on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, exactly. But he said he did not want to propose when he had to kneel, feeling as if he might crap himself or throw up. So I thought, you know what? Actually, he's probably right on that one. What could be worse than having just consumed 63 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes and then trying to bend down on one knee and get that little case
open? Did he do
open.
63?
Yeah, he did 63. So he was,
because the women, I know the women would push him for 50, but they didn't even pass
there. Another thing, too, with
they,
the women.
They had a tougher time, I think, than the men for some reason. Mickey Sudo, new female champ. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, the dogs were harder earlier in the day. And then at high noon, the clouds came in, the rain poured. So maybe the buns were easier, but the dogs were tougher.
Wow, I didn't know that humidity would play a factor in the dogs, but I guess it's something to know. We can find out if chowing down 30 hot dogs in under 10 minutes is something that is
acceptable
in the etiquette world.
I think it might be socially anathema to include competitive eating and etiquette in the same conversation. But
which fork do I chow down 48 dozen oysters with?
Exactly. So we'll have to find out.
You know?
Yes, my signature line of spork.
Yes, exactly.
It's coming out in pewter in August. Nice. I'm looking forward to that.
So today we're going to be talking to our guest, Patricia Napier Fitzpatrick from the Etiquette School of New York. It says on her website that she creates guidelines that are considerate of everyone, which is nice because I just don't think that really happens today.
Well,
so.
Yeah, because the guidelines when me and most of us were growing up were getting slapped in the head. You know?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. It's actually something I want to discuss with Ms. Fitzpatrick because I've heard it said that you take a child up until 7. Some people say 7, some people say 9, and that's when they learn most of their manners and etiquette that they're going to use for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And, you know, for as foul-mouthed as we are, right, and, you know, most of our language definitely deserves to be in a schoolyard in 1977.
But at the same time, we were raised to say please.
Right.
We were raised to say thank you. We were raised to, you know, pick up our dishes. We were raised to, you know, to basically not be pigs. You know,
exactly.
And not be annoying. Not be annoying to the people next to us. And that was as kids. And today, that's one of the things that's one we were just talking about. This one of my biggest pet peeves is the jackhole next to me who is, you know, telling everybody about his project, blah, 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 and he's just being an exhibitionist at a restaurant. I'm trying to eat, and I have to know this guy's life story, and I got to know what he's working on, and I got to know...
He's taking meetings.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I looked at it as foul behavior.
Well, all right, so before we bring our guest on, let's try and agree that we're not going to speak over each other, interrupt, no bodily sounds, no speaking with food in our mouths, and try and reduce the general buffoonery while we're on air. Ms. Fitzpatrick, hello, are you with us?
I'm with you. This is a very entertaining dialogue.
Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We will try to turn eating disorder into eating quite orderly.
Yes, yes. But, you know, what you're saying is actually true, that children do learn most of their manners before they're seven, and they learn them from their parents. At least they did in the past, like you did. But now parents aren't at home, or they're talking on their cell phones, and they're not... setting an example. So that's why they come to me for classes.
It's working out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The thing I think is what we tend to see isn't just the cell phones or they're working. And look, people are busy. I understand it. You got to make a living these days. Things are expensive. But
right.
It's also the level of entitlement that's allowed the child. You know, they're like, oh, little Hunter needs to express himself. Oh, he needs to, you know, you can't be too staunch a parent. And that can be really annoying when you're trying to eat.
When I was a child, there was a saying, children should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that doesn't seem to be the case now. But if they're heard, they shouldn't be heard by all the tables around them.
Agreed.
Because they should be mindful of others and not disturb the happiness and pleasure that other people are having at the table or at their meals in restaurants.
Well, how do you feel about... manners and etiquette in general with the population, children and adults? Do you feel like
it's... culturally.
Yeah, culturally. Is it slipping?
It seems to be slipping, but it also seems that there's a whole new awareness of it because it's slipping, which I think is going to make it come back in style to have good manners and be considerate of other people.
Yeah, it's a shame that actually has to be something that comes back in style. But you say on your site, everyone wants the same thing, to know what they are doing, to know that they are doing the right thing and they are treating
right.
others with respect.
Right.
You know, I just don't really get that that vibe that people really care that they're treating others with respect these days. It seems like, and I could be the first one to be like, you know, the kids today, shaking my fist, you know, at 45, I'm the oldest 45-year-old in New York City. But
right.
I just don't feel that. I don't feel that people really have that respect that do unto others anymore. They got their faces in their phones and they're throwing elbows.
Well, do you know what you said before? You said everybody's very busy. I like to give them the benefit of the doubt. That they are busy and that they don't really just have bad manners. It's just that they're so busy they're not thinking about others maybe being as mindful as they should.
You think that's actually acceptable to kind of cut them slack like that?
I don't think it's acceptable, but as I say, I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt and to think that they would ordinarily have good manners. But, you know, New Yorkers, we're always in a hurry. We're going somewhere. We're doing things. Not to excuse us by any means.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, yeah, but at the same time, look, I want to talk a little bit about international manners and at the mm-hmm. table and whatnot, but also there's certain unwritten rules in New York. You know, I mean, like, for example, you don't eat your pizza with a fork.
Yeah.
You know, you don't...
unless it's the right fork.
But, I mean, there are other things that are kind of interesting in regards to New York, like things like...
My father always found time to give me a backhand if I did something.
Yeah, that's always that. But, I mean, like, even what we were talking about before with the headphones, you know, I've been a Subway passenger for years, my entire life. And today, you've got the people that... stop short right before you get to the stairs, listening to the headphones, staring into the phones, completely oblivious to you because their sense of spatial orientation. I mean, I find that to be very bad manners when you're not even thinking when you're walking.
Well, even worse than that, people don't get up. They don't get up for old
right.
They
don't. They, don't yeah.
they actually have to have an announcement that
right.
says,
and they still don't get up.
You know, and
right.
It's like
because courtesy is contagious.
People are not mindful of others. Absolutely, I go to my gym and it drives me insane. As soon as someone starts walking up the steps, as soon as they start walking, they pull out their cell phone to check their messages.
Yeah.
And of course that takes some, you know, like they have to stop and take much longer. Yes, people are just not mindful of other people, and that's what manners are about, thinking about the other person.
What would you say presently are the biggest affronts to etiquette these days?
The biggest affronts are, as unfortunately, it's the cell phones. People walking down the streets, not thinking about other people behind them, in front of them, just being in a hurry. And you talk about the subway, people trying to get on when you're trying to get off.
Oh, yeah.
We can all go on and on.
And going in and out of stores, people trying to get in when you're trying to go out. So the rule is you get out before you go in.
Right. Let the person out. Let the people get off the train, and then we can all get on the train.
The train, the elevator.
It's amazing how simple that is.
So etiquette for the subway and also for lovemaking seems to be almost the same in terms of...
I'm not going to go there.
All right. I guess you mentioned cell phones, so it sounds like technology has been a detriment to etiquette maybe worldwide, even though the boon of technology is supposed to connect us and bring us closer. Do you run into technology being a new thing in the etiquette world?
And then is there an etiquette to technology? We were just talking about this before. In other words, within texting or within emails or within social media, have new rules arisen? One of the ones that people say, don't put your cap locks on because you're screaming. I never quite understood that because I can't hear letters, you know, but I don't do it.
There's absolutely, etiquette evolves with the times, okay? So 10 years ago when I started my business, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have LinkedIn, Facebook was just starting. So people like me, like the etiquette experts, sit down and say, well, what makes sense? What are the rules of etiquette for the new social media that we're having now? And it's really treating people the same way online that you would treat them in person. So things like texting and talking on your cell phone when you're sitting across from someone at dinner, is that acceptable? No, that's not acceptable.
Hey, and I got to interrupt because, and I know I'm not supposed to, but we sit by what we call the bad day table in our studio, and the woman who is talking to her friend is texting while she's doing it right now.
So the person in front of you deserves your respect and attention.
Yeah.
You know, why go out to dinner with someone if you're going to be texting someone else when you're having dinner with them?
Yeah, it really is horrible. And it's horrible that we even have to say that to people these days. Like, I don't know if you saw, but recently there was a Craigslist post about a New York City restaurant, and it's been making its rounds on the internet regarding customers and how they behave in restaurants now compared to 10 years ago.
Right.
And it was also about time. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, it's about time. Right. But you know, I don't know if you saw it, but it's basically about how everybody is just on their phones and they're all just very self-consumed, and it takes a much longer time to place an order and just to acknowledge the waiter. And it's kind of sad that we're all at a point now that, you know, that we have to read a post on Craigslist to go, uh-huh, that happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happened? My husband told me that, when there were guns, I guess in the 19th century, that, you know, the restaurants, bars started checking the guns at the, you know, when they walked in at the door.
They did that to me and my friends when I lived in New Orleans.
Maybe we're going to have to check our cell phones at the door.
There's places that do that. There's a few places in New York that you can actually, it's voluntary. You check your cell phone at the door, and you go there because... You're checking your cell phone.
I like that. Yeah, what restaurant is that? I want to go there.
You know what? It's more like these particular nights. It's like a moving party where people go and they have to leave their cell phones at the front.
Well, when I worked at Soho House, they have a no cell phone rule.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You know. Well, okay. Let's try to go to the positive though. Let's try to learn a few things here. You know, can you from a standpoint of just like etiquette and I've been in the advertising world and the business world for a long time myself, and I've had to learn certain things. Like I used to have Japanese clients. I had to learn. I'm 6'5", and I had to learn how to bow as low as I possibly could to being a subordinate or to someone who was a superior.
Surprised your girlfriend didn't already put you
in line. Well, the problem is Japanese people are very small, you know, so the bowing was an issue. But I learned things. You give cards with two hands. If you give a gift, the wrapping is as important as the gift is. You never compliment something about somebody's house, and it's perfectly okay to slurp my noodles. In fact, that's a sign that I like the food. Now, are there certain... definite do-goods that you can do during a business lunch or a business dinner, something that you know will impress somebody from an etiquette standpoint that people don't do anymore?
Well, first of all, I appreciate your knowledge of the Asian ways of etiquette, because everything you said is absolutely true.
Yeah, I used to work with Sony.
Yes, absolutely true with Asian etiquette. Well, with business meals, the important thing to remember that the person who invites is the host, and the host is like a general. He's in charge of everything that happens.
Okay.
And he's responsible for, of course, paying for the meal, making sure that his guest has the service, the food served the way he wants it to be served. He chooses the restaurant. He doesn't ask the guest to choose the restaurant. He chooses a restaurant with the guest in mind. What does he like? Fine dining? Does he like casual dining?
And
you want to take him to a place where he's comfortable.
Would it be appropriate to look that person up on LinkedIn or social media and be like, okay, is that more stalking? Like, I'll be like, okay, what is this guy interested in? Is that a good way to go, or is it a little creepy?
No. I believe that that's the benefit of social media and the internet. We can find everything out about the client. And everything about a company before we interview, before we take them out. That's actually kind of, I think that's showing them that we respect them and that we are, you know, we want to do everything we can to do what will be good for them.
All right, I got one other quick question, and this one has been, these are two things that have been bothering me my whole life because I never knew what to do with this. Weddings and funerals. What do you say on that line? You know, the line at the end of the wedding, you know, I mean, do you say, you know, best wishes? Do you say good luck? Do you say congratulations?
Welcome to the land of the living dead.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to go through every single person, and you've got to say something. I never know what to say. Same with funerals. When I see somebody, I say my condolences.
He's been using my condolences at both weddings and funerals, so we definitely need your help in this matter.
So what do you
wedding,
say? Yeah.
For a wedding, you say congratulations to the husband because he's so lucky to have her.
Okay. And what do you say to the wife?
And you can say best wishes for a long, happy life together.
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
What are you saying about Ben here?
I've been saying, good luck with that. So it's kind of the same thing.
He's the lucky one. The good luck, the congratulations go to him for finding her. Okay? Mm-hmm. For a funeral, it's just, you don't say I'm sorry, but I know your person's is in a better place.
Oh yeah, okay. That one bothered me. That one always bothered me when people said that. Oh, they're in a better place. I'm sorry. Yeah,
you don't say that.
And I always like to say my sympathies.
You just say that. Yes, that's I'm sorry. You say I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't say I understand because no one understands what a person's going through.
I really appreciate that you actually said it that way.
Yes, I have.
And now we're all based in New York. How do New Yorkers rank in the worldwide etiquette scale? Are we ahead of the curve? Are we behind the curve? Are we in Cro-Magnon in terms of etiquette, or are we at the forefront?
Unfortunately, the Europeans have it over us, but only because they've been more formal. As a general rule for years, for centuries, actually. They're more formal, and I don't want to say they're more sophisticated, more global in their ways, but we're coming around. We're learning. New York, unfortunately, according to Travel and Leisure, I don't know if we're first or second rudest in the country or world.
Right. So even in the U.S.
We're number one. We're number one.
I don't want to say we're number one. I hate that. Uh-huh.
What state or city would you say in the U.S. is particularly known for its fine etiquette?
I would say San Francisco.
Wow. Okay. Is there a reason behind that? Or
yes,
just...
but not Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And Washington, D.C., because we have all the diplomats there, and this is what they do. They study protocol. They know the rules. And also the South, even. The South traditionally has been more attuned to etiquette and concerned about manners than the Northeast. We're more intellectual. They're more socially inclined.
Well, that was always one of my favorite things about living in the South, the terms of endearment, the ways people spoke to each other. Yeah. It always made things so much nicer. But I'm curious because things change, borders change, cities change, even language changes, LOL. Are the rules of etiquette changing?
They are. The rules of etiquette are evolving to adapt to the times. But we still have three things that they are dependent upon, and it's being kind, considerate, and respectful of other people.
So getting back to corporate for a second, I have something, because everybody is busy and everybody's working all the time. I have something that I like to employ called sexy harassment. is that acceptable? It's not sexual harassment. It's sexy harassment.
No, it's not acceptable. No. In fact, you know, women who wear clothing and try to be sexy disempowers them, and it takes away from their credibility.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was just
checking. You know what? I want to talk about more about the restaurant business, because that's what we talk about a lot.
Yeah, the restaurant business.
But from a manner standpoint, like things like, I smoke cigarettes, okay? And so my palate is not as sensitive as, say, Crazy Legs here. Now, Paul can attest to that. He smokes, or he used to smoke.
I quit.
You quit, right? Mm-hmm. But is it okay to ask for salt and pepper if it doesn't exist at the table, or hot sauce, or God forbid, like there used to be that joke about like asking for ketchup at the French restaurant and the chef coming out with a cleaver, you know? But I mean, is it okay? Because a lot of restaurants don't serve salt and pepper on the table. Is that insulting to the restaurant?
Well, there are a couple of schools of thought in that. And then who's a chef here?
I am.
Chef Paul, okay? Supposedly the food is served, seasoned the way the chef wants you to have it. Okay? But perhaps you like more salt. And as long as you taste it before you ask for the salt and pepper, in my opinion, it's okay.
That's the thing. As long as they taste it first.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And
that's
a lot
right.
of that stuff is very ego-driven by the chef.
And habit-driven, it is. I mean, people sometimes do that. The other one I want to know is there actually any etiquette socially from the standpoint of a group of people get out splitting the bill? Right, splitting the bill has become easier now than it's ever been, because there's apps that can do it. There's an app you can put in your bill,
right.
Whatever. But is there an etiquette to, like, if I invited you, should I be picking up the bill? What's the etiquette? What's the general etiquette about picking up a bill when you're with a group of people?
Well, when you're with a group of people, there are a few things about having dinner with a group of people. Number one, I think it's the cost of having dinner with a group of people to share it equally. But also, number two, if the person only had, let's just say, I had a friend actually once who said, I'd like to have my check separate because I don't drink, alcohol. I don't have wine. So I want to have my check.
That's
so I'm like,
one.
And then when it was over, I thought, well, I only had one glass of wine. Should I ask for a separate check? Everybody else had more.
That is an interesting one. I mean, I didn't even think of that.
It gets kind of silly. But granted, if someone has so much less than everybody else, mm-hmm. I think it's only fair to give them a separate check.
Right.
But if everyone has, one, two courses, which we should have, you should have the same number of courses as everybody else at the table. That's kind of a general rule when you're dining with other people.
Mm-hmm. All right.
To have the same number of courses.
Right.
But if everybody except one person maybe has so much more, maybe you give that person a break and give them, they pay a little bit less.
All right. That was a great answer.
But to get out your calculators and calculate what everyone had is a bit, I think, much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't drink. Paul doesn't drink, and that's one of the things. It's actually a pet peeve because my friends drink. So, we're going to go to break. We're going to do a quick break, and we'll be right back. Thanks so much, and thanks everybody for listening. This has been Eating Disorder so far.
Listening to Trial and Error by Snowmine.
Hi, I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning 5 years old. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food and culture content like no one else. And we absolutely need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Trying not to cry, telling him the reasons that you had to leave him.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hi, this is Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, host of the Wild Game Domain, and you're listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody. So, Patricia.
Yes.
Spiro has a couple of things he wants to get into regarding different things in the rest of the world, but one thing I just wanted to ask you quick. I had a guy show up yesterday for a job interview, opening a place in Tribeca, and he was wearing flip-flops. Now, I know that this is a food show, but this definitely makes me lose my lunch.
I'm wearing flip-flops. Why? You gotta start.
I gotta tell you, I feel like it's the death of chivalry. Like, a man can't move at a moment's notice. You know, he can't jump into action, you know, shuffling across a train platform in flip-flops. But how do you feel about that? It seems like we've moved into a culture of cargo shorts and flip-flops.
I'm wearing cargo shorts, too, man. Really? Really, Paul? Really?
Is it acceptable? Patricia, how do you feel about that?
Well, actually, in a recent survey by executives around the country, 38% said one of the most important things about, you know, presence and interviewing is polish and grooming. So if someone can't take the time and effort to put on a pair of shoes and polish them.
Well, in Spiro's defense, he did get a pedicure. Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then what kind of employee is he going to be? You know, what kind of work is he going to do? It's an indication of his attention to detail.
Do you think that has something to do with chivalry? Am I completely off the mark here?
It's not chivalry. It's if you're going to interview for a job, you want to put your best foot forward, literally. and can you do that in flip-flops? No, you can't.
Well, look at what people wear to travel now versus used to dress up. It was an event or going to the movies.
It's now they carry a pillow.
It's like spandex for miles now.
But to the defense of people who are doing that, from somebody from my standpoint, I get very uncomfortable very quickly. Traveling has become very uncomfortable. Traveling has become, you have to strip down halfway through the, you know, security. And the same thing with movie theaters. Everything's become cramped and smaller. So I think that might be part of the problem. It's not necessarily that people don't want to make it an event. I think that the industry itself has made it Mick Airlines, you know. It's become like, all right, jam as many people into this flying tuna can as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about going to the theater? I was at the theater.
Well, that's different.
And I saw this couple, they were like wearing T-shirts. Mm.
Oh, yes.
And shorts, and I'm like, my gosh, where do you think you are?
Yeah. You mean like Broadway theater?
Yes, a Broadway theater where you have to pay $200 for a ticket. I mean, I don't understand. I think people are dressing down a little bit too much. But for an interview, coming to your restaurant, certainly if you can't make the effort to put on a pair of shoes and dress for an interview, then I wouldn't hire him.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. How do you feel about it?
I hope he's listening.
He didn't get. I was pretty forthcoming with him about that. How do you feel about etiquette in regard to letter writing? You know, I have a lot of friends of mine, and they still every time, even with an email, they'll say, "Dear Paul," mm-hmm. and I get a lot of resumes now, and it never says to whom it may concern. They all start with "Hi." And it's a little ridiculous. You know, again, I understand that language changes, but that's pretty bad, I think.
It's not a proper business etiquette email. It has to have "dear" and what your name is, or "hello" and what your name is, not "hey," "hi." Mm-hmm. There has to be a salutation. The subject has to be, you know, pertinent to the subject, and then there has to be a thank you, and then they sign their name or best regards.
I use to whom it may concern with my mom. I like to keep etiquette in family affairs.
And guess what? Here's the thing: if they can't take the trouble to find out the person's name that they're writing to, then are they going to take the trouble to put the right ingredients in the recipe or whatever it is?
Exactly.
I totally agree with you guys in regards to the the informality has become a disease, as far as I'm concerned, in communications, back to the LOLs and everything. I mean, in 1984, Orwell wrote up how they created this newspeak that just dumbed down the language. And, I mean, maybe I'm just being like Paul, and like, damn kids, but it feels like the New York Times is dumber now than it was 10 years ago when, you know, when it was strictly a print periodical, you know, and I read some of this stuff and I get really irritated because I try my best to be articulate in my written communications. And the reason I do this is because, A...
Because we struggle so much in our verbal
communication. That's right. One of the reasons.
That's why I read the New York Post, because it can only get smarter.
Well, I want to... There's a couple of things that we looked up that we didn't know about, like for international etiquette, international manners. You know, like, I didn't know in Afghanistan, if you drop bread, you pick it up and you kiss it, and it's okay. You know, and like there's a thing in Canada, never show up early for a dinner
party.
Well,
we kind of did that in Brooklyn. We had the three-second rule. You know, kiss it up to God.
Kiss it up to God. But like you shouldn't eat with your hands in chili. In China, belching
You shouldn't
is
eat okay. chili with your hands.
No, you shouldn't. China, belching is okay. You know, belching says, okay, this is a great meal. Are there any international rules? Like, are there anything that no matter where you go, all right, you don't know the language, you don't know what's going on, what are some basics? Because, I mean, we have this, the ugly American, you know, that cliche of being,
right.
you know, like when you don't understand what we're saying, we bring up the volume like you're deaf, you know? Those kind of cliches. Are there any things that Americans can do to dispel that myth internationally?
Well, number one, follow the lead of your host. Okay? Mm-hmm. I always say if you don't know what you're doing, look at the person who looks like they know what they're doing, and hopefully your host will know what they're doing, okay? So you should follow their lead. Number two, the world is more formal than the United States, okay? They're much more formal than we are. So we can't be joking like we are, for instance, you know? They don't appreciate our humor so much.
You don't get maybe sarcasm as much.
Maybe because they don't understand it, all right?
Right.
So, and in addition to that, you know, before you go, there's no excuse now for not learning the manners of the country you're going to. Right. You know, for instance, in India, you know, if you're using your hand, even if you're left-handed, you can't use your left hand to eat. You have to use your right hand.
Yeah, because your left hand is associated with
You gotta. You can't go one show, Spiro, without bringing some sort of...
And I had clients from India a couple summers ago, and I was saying, never lick your fingers.
Yeah.
And they were so polite. They didn't say a word to me. And I happened to be looking up their etiquette that night before I saw them the next day, and I said, in India, it's acceptable to lick your fingers. But they were very cute. So I told them, I read this, and they were very sweet about that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Patricia, I have one question for you.
Yes.
So when you want to get away from your day job, when you want to sort of go the opposite of always having prim and proper behavior and etiquette. Mm-hmm. Is there some activity that you personally do that is you would never want your clients to see you doing, or is basically your vacation from etiquette?
Like a monster truck rally or something, you know?
That's a hard one, you know, because that's a very hard one. I've always been sort of prim and proper, you know. I've been accused of being that way. So, I don't know. I can't think of anything that I wouldn't want my clients to see me doing.
That's a good answer. Good answer.
I'm sorry.
We were testing you.
I was hoping it was eating chili with your hands.
Actually practicing eating with my chopsticks yesterday because I'm not as good at those as I am with knives and forks.
Well, can I give you a tip on that? And I learned this recently from an Asian friend. I switched to wooden chopsticks.
Yeah.
The reason I switched to wooden chopsticks is wood has much more friction to it than the shiny ones, and they're much easier training wheels and much easier to eat with for me than the shiny
smooth ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Well, I learned the same thing on YouTube. So.
Patricia, bringing it back to restaurants, what's your take on criticism at restaurants? You know, is there a rule of thumb for critiquing a business, or if you're at a restaurant and you're unhappy, how would you handle it? And further, how would you handle it afterwards if you did want to go on a social media site?
Well, my number one critique or criticism of restaurants that really, really bothers me is that I teach my clients the silent service code. But that's, you know what that means?
That's the worst service code. That's the worst customer to for a business owner. That's the worst customer. I would actually prefer a customer tell me if they think something's wrong.
No, the silent service code. So I teach my clients how to place their utensils in the resting and finish positions, and it's called the silent service code. So the wait staff doesn't come up and ask you, are you resting or finished?
Right. Turn your spoon over. Turn your fork over. Right.
Yes, and every single restaurant except the Four Seasons in New York comes up and asks, are you resting? I mean, are you finished?
Right.
Okay? And so they're not reading the silent service code, and that really bothers me. Number two, if things are not right, I never go on social media and complain or say something negative.
You don't?
I don't like to do that, no.
You would bring it up right then and there? Or you would just be the silent customer. The thing that I thought you were referring to, the silent customer, the reason why we don't like the silent customer in the business is the waiter will say, how's everything? And they say, fine. But they're actually unhappy and they don't say anything, but they never come back.
No, I'm talking about the silent service code,
exactly.
The way we place our utensils. But in terms of, is everything fine? If my client's not happy, I will certainly tell them.
Hmm. Yes.
You know, recook something. If my meal is not right, I never send it back because I don't want my client to feel uncomfortable.
If they're enjoying theirs.
Right.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. Right. So I just won't go back.
Do you feel that there are certain elements of social reviews that are beneficial?
I suppose. But you have to consider the source.
Right. So you're saying that Yelp review of medieval times is not... Because I was so excited, and then...
How do you feel about social media in general, Twitter, Facebook, all those kinds of things? About people revealing, you know, all these, apparently innermost, feelings about themselves and what's going on in their lives.
Well, I think keep it to yourself. Well, I don't want to know about your innermost feelings.
Yeah,
unless I'm your best friend and we're talking one-to-one in person.
Well, that's really funny. We've said this before here about social media. You have people, you have these wingnuts on social media going, oh, my privacy, Facebook is taking my privacy, blah, blah, blah. And the next four posts tell you who they're going out with, what they just ate, where they went to the bathroom. What are they doing tomorrow? Where they work? Who they, you know, who their parents are? And meanwhile, they're complaining about their privacy, you know. And I always found that to be kind of ridiculous. And the oversharing on Facebook, I think that and Twitter and whatnot, I think that's ridiculous. You know, I don't understand it. It's sometimes it just feels like a call for help.
Patricia,
well, maybe it is.
Patricia, I see that you have the social success makeover, the finishing school for adults.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind in wrapping this up, where do we stand as a society? And if you could take the entire culture and bring them to your class, what would be your top lessons?
Well, my top lesson that I teach from 5 to 55 is first impressions are lasting. You never have a second chance to make a first impression.
Oh, God. So you're not going to talk to us anymore, right?
So it's critical that your first impression be the one you want to portray. And number two is be mindful of others. It's not about me, me, me. It's about you. It's about everyone else. So treat others. I know it sounds like Pollyanna, but treat others the way you'd like to be treated.
That's just good advice and common sense. And I always said, I think that manners have a lot to do with common sense in most cases.
And they are, and many of them are, exactly. But unfortunately, many people don't have common sense. Or they haven't thought about it, you know.
If we send Spiro to that class, will you send back Eliza to Doolittleopolis?
Well, yes, that was my favorite movie growing up. My Dear Lady.
I bet. That makes a lot of sense.
Can I wear flip-flops if I come?
Well, thank you very much, Patricia, for your insight.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
You're welcome. It was nice being with you.
We appreciate you being a good sport and dealing with our colloquialisms.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Take care. I hope...
All right. Good evening.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us on Eating Disorder, and we'll see you next time.
Woohoo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.